Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, fj@offbeatoregon.com, your host for today's Offbeat Oregon History Podcast episode. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy it. Today's episode is part two of a two-part presentation of the story that was originally published on May 25th of 2025 under the headline, Oregon's Second Largest City Built in 6 Months. Part one was on the podcast feed yesterday. Here we go. The soldiers of the 96th Infantry Deadeye Division must have felt pretty sanguine about their anticipated several months of combat training when they arrived at the scenic, sunny, beautiful cantonment of Camp Adair, close to the end of the dry season. They would soon have cause to revisit these impressions, as the rains started just about the same time training did, and soon they started referring to their new temporary home as Swamp Adair. As for the Timberwolves, they at least were spared from the disappointment. Their training started in the middle of winter that year.
Basic training for newly arrived recruits of the 104th Infantry started on December 14, 1942, wrote Leo Huff and Howard Doyle of the 104th in a 1946 article in Washington Infantry Journal Press. The soldiers soon learned why the natives along the Willamette Valley hibernated each winter. Raincoats were part of the regular uniform as the doughboys sloshed along over the sodden countryside and learned to throw themselves in the cold mud with disregard. During basic, men could be seen marching in every direction and in every formation. They were learning to become fighting soldiers. As the motorists rode on Highway 99W past the cantonment, they saw some of the grimmest training that American soldiers could get. Cold steel flashed in the sunlight or pierced the fog. Whatever the weather, the infantrymen were attacking dummies with the bayonet. All the men learned their weapons, and in January they were firing record courses in the driving rain and blinding snow.
Of course, from the Army's standpoint, the relentless awfulness of the weather and terrain was a feature rather than a bug. As the soldiers learned to survive and fight through the harsh conditions of a Willamette Valley winter, they developed the toughness that would enable them to survive under similar conditions when German or Japanese soldiers were shooting at them. That didn't make it any more fun, though, for the men who were being thus toughened. Later, the 30th Powder River and 70th Trailblazers infantry divisions joined the 96th and 104th so that if misery really did love company, there was at least the comfort of more company for the miserable, cold, muddy, itchy soldiers, and more about the itchy part in a minute.
After a week in the rain and cold, by the weekend the barracks were a luxury, as was a weekend pass in any of the surrounding towns, historian Baker writes. When any Camp Adair soldier was asked about the training in the camp, even though he might have said how beautiful the Willamette Valley was, he usually replied, "Wet, cold, rain-soaked, hot, itchy, and full of poison oak."
Ah, yes, here we are back around to that itchy part. Poison oak was a particular hazard for soldiers at Camp Adair. The climate and environment throughout the 60,000-acre campus was nearly ideal for the stuff, and soldiers quickly learned to recognize it with dread. Severe poison oak rashes became one of the most common ailments treated in the camp hospital. As the war dragged on, it got harder to visit those neighboring towns, as cars and car parts were not available, especially tires. By the time the war ended, though, Camp Adair was no longer being used to train soldiers. As the rush of recruits early in the war abated, the Army found it was easier to train the remaining troops in camps closer to the major population centers, so Camp Adair became a prisoner of war camp for the last few months of the war. The camp hospital, too, stayed busy for the duration, but by the end of the war, Camp Adair was largely unused. As the Army looked around at all the surplus war materiel that it had created to fight the great struggle, Camp Adair was probably pretty close to the top of everyone's list of places that could be easily closed down to save money. Most of Camp Adair was torn down almost as quickly as it was put up. The main cantonment buildings were declared surplus at the end of 1945, and various salvage contractors were invited to come dismantle it for resale. Dozens, possibly hundreds, of Camp Adair houses were sold off to home builders around the valley. At least some of those were sold in 8x12 or 8x16-foot panels. The walls of the buildings were made of 1-inch tongue-and-groove boards, ribbon-nailed to crossbraces of the same stock, and with 3/8-inch sheetrock, Kaiser brand, secured to the inside, which is an approach that has been dubbed structural sheathing, If you were looking at a modest house in the Willamette Valley with 2-inch thick walls, chances are really good that you're looking at a Camp Adair house. The hospital section was turned over to Oregon State University, and it was used for some years after the war as housing for students studying at the college on the GI Bill, of whom there were quite a few, of course, freshly returned from the war. They called it Adair Student Village. It was closed and most of the apartment buildings demolished in 1951, but by that time a town had sprung up around it, and that town today is, of course, Adair Village. Large parts of the wooded southwestern area of the campus, including the old town site of Tampico and a large swath of Soap Creek Valley, were handed over to OSU and added to its Dunn Forest holdings. Visitors to those lands still occasionally find souvenirs from the days when maneuvers and live fire training was done there. I myself found a coil of razor wire there during a Benton County search and rescue training exercise on Prune Ridge in 2004, and another member of our party found an old expended smoke grenade. In 1957, part of the cantonment area became Adair Air Force Station and SAGE support facility. SAGE was a system of information processing computers and equipment linked to the nation's radar and other sensors during the Cold War, which was built for purposes of detecting a Soviet attack in time to respond. SAGE is an acronym. It stands for something that doesn't make any sense. Everybody just calls it SAGE system. Plans were made to install a battery of surface-to-air missiles on the site, but before work could get started, the program was canceled and the Air Force closed down the facilities there in 1969. Today, the northeast corner of Camp Adair is a wildlife refuge, the E.E. Wilson. It's been restored to the seasonal wetland that it once was, so mosquitoes are not unknown there, although thanks to the plentiful bug-eating wildlife, not as common as you might expect them to be. The long, straight, broad stretches of abandoned blacktop make for a pleasant bicycling spot, and the plentiful ruins and foundation walls are great for geocaching. It's an especially rewarding place to visit with a copy of Baker's book to use as a ghost town guide, if you will. But watch out for the poison oak. It seriously is everywhere. In the towns of Adair Village today, a few of the older houses, as well as businesses, are still housed in old Camp Adair houses, either adopted as they stood or purchased from the salvage company and moved to the site. Along William R. Carr Avenue, you can see two of the old barracks buildings that were purchased in 2010 for the Camp Adair Interpretive Center. Key sources in this story included works by John H. Baker, Washington Infantry Journal Press, and the Benton County Historical Museum. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Offbeat Oregon, by the way, is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. In addition to Offbeat Oregon books, podcasts, and audiobooks, we also publish book and audiobook versions of collections of what you might call street literature. 1920s pulp magazine writers like H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Rice Burroughs, gothic penny dreadful titles like Sweeney Todd and The Adventures of Highwayman Dick Turpin, all straight shots of bottled-in bond working man's fiction and working women's fiction from the last couple of centuries. If that sounds like your jam, I'd love to have you check them out. That is pulp-lit.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.